pillars of light guide you and waves part. Even by day, the fire that rises high in the night blazes against the sun. You will cross over unafraid, and your way will be safe. Over every rushing stream, a bridge, and before you the presence that shines in all that is.
Well, obviously, last Sunday we didn't know or expect that Kevin would be having surgery this week. And he contacted a few of us on Tuesday. Obviously, he didn't have time to have prepared a service. And so Ed and I did a little brainstorming and so on, and were able to put this service together this morning. Well, Kevin sent me a text expressing his thanks for putting it together. And my response was, it is totally my pleasure. It is in my talent pool. And now I won't have to do something that is not in my talent pool. I won't have to bring a casserole to the Kesslers' home, because as most of you know, cooking is not my thing. 2 weeks ago, I started the first of my classes toward the brand new Master's in Theopoetics and Writing from Bethany Seminary. All of my certificate classes, 18 hours worth, were folded into that. So I will be able to obtain that master's degree in just a little over a year and a half. A new class was formed. It's called Preaching, Theopoetics, and Society. And the class is taught by Don Atoni Wilhelm. Some of you may have met Don before at conference and so on. She has probably been at Bethany, I know she's been there for over two decades. She's a wonderful preacher and a dynamic teacher. And I have really already learned so much in just 2 weeks. The best part, and this is no, you know, not saying anything bad about it if it were made up any other way, but the best part about the class is there's Don. And there are three other women in the class. And one of the women is from Canton, Illinois. And one is from Nashville, Tennessee. And the other is presently serving in Nigeria. And we have had these wonderful conversations far outside of just what you think the normal preaching class would be, because it's been embedding theopoetics into it. And if you remember from me telling you about this coursework some time ago, theopoetics is looking at all aspects of God and theology through the arts, through poetry and music and metaphor and symbolism and allegory. Not necessarily literally, but by taking things apart and taking scripture apart and taking prayer apart and looking deeper than just the actual literal words. So one of the first things that we've been doing, there are several textbooks, but one of the first things that we've been doing is reading and commenting and discussing a book called When Poets Pray. And it was written by Marilyn McIntyre. And Marilyn McIntyre is also the author of the prayer that Pam just read for you called Assurance. And she takes a poem and then she takes it apart from a very personal perspective in each chapter. So this morning I am going to be Marilyn McIntyre because she writes in the first person. And I'm going to tell you about her own prayer in the form of the poem Assurance. Pam read it, I'm going to repeat it for you. Pillars of light guide you and waves part. Even by day, the fire that rises high in the night blazes against the sun. You will cross over unafraid, and your way will be safe. Over every rushing stream, a bridge, and before you the presence that shines in all that is. Sometimes a prayer is a thing heard instead of spoken. Sometimes when the mind is quieted and the heart open, the directives we need, or the reminders, or the reassurances come. In images or phrases or whole sentences, or now and then in a poem What we long for is given. I cherish these particular prayer experiences and have learned not to overthink them. I may ask as words come and shape themselves into lines whether my inner hearing is faithful and accurate, but mostly I believe that when words come as gifts in times of prayer, the simplest and right response is gratitude. That was how this poem came. I wrote it, as I have many others, in response to an artwork, an abstract print by Anthony Askew, an artist and a man of faith whose rich visual imagination and sensibility have blessed me. Meaning, I have found, emerges from images as from dreams. And when I allow my gaze to linger, unhurried, and pay attention to what feelings and memories they awaken. Sometimes I have also come to recognize a work of visual art is an act of prayer, just as a poem may be. Well, this particular image, composed of layered vertical swaths of white, yellow, and rust, bridged by brown rope-like lines, seemed, as I gazed at it, to beckon me into encounter. It filled the eye with desert colors, suggesting the meeting of earth and sun, soil and light, and offering a stark reminder of the many biblical scenes of wrestling, fleeing, waiting, wandering, and meeting God, fearful and wonderful, in dry, sun-drenched, frightening places. I found myself remembering the Israelites, whose flight from Egypt was guided by a pillar of cloud by day and a fire by night, and of the Red Sea parting. And the first two lines of the poem suddenly came, not simply as a recollected fact or a story, but as personal address. I realized how, in recent months, I had been guided and a way had been opened through a thicket of complications. As I wrestled with God, I found myself held fast in the protective embrace of my divine adversary, who was, and is, in fact, a very present help in time of trouble. I remembered, too, as I gazed at the brilliant whites so evocative of unveiled noonday sun, John's simple declaration that God is light, and thought of the myriad ways light reaches us, enfolds us, exposes us, lights our way, and sometimes nearly blinds us. I've always loved the phrase, light from light, in the Nicene Creed. Like grace upon grace, it suggests a cascade, a light fall of tumbling photons driven outward from the divine source on a force like wind. We are showered in light, and behind the light we see there is light we cannot see. When I was very young, I remember my mother explaining to me that the stars were still in the sky in the daytime, though we couldn't see them because the sunlight hid them. I was captivated by that fact. It seemed strange that light would hide what we could see in the darkness. Later, that same strangeness attached to the image of God as robed in light. So where the light I saw before me began to seem very like a pillar of fire, I imagined that fire not dying out by day, but hidden like the stars. These days, I think a lot about guidance. I'm interested in how people receive guidance, recognize it, discern what is of God, and it was more likely a simple matter of preference or inclination. I wonder about what we call intuition, being taught or instructed from within. I think about the ordinary language we put to moments of awakening or direction. It occurred to me, I found myself, it came to me, something stopped me in my tracks. I was led. We are led. Once I allow myself to recognize in my decisions an element of the unexpected, the non-rational, the surprisingly confident impulse to abandon the pro and con list, I begin to become aware of that pillar of fire that even in the day draws me toward its light. That confidence came as the poem did, with an assurance against many odds. You will cross over unafraid, and your way will be safe. There's much to be afraid of these days. I devote more attention to national and international news than may be good for me, to climate change and polluted oceans and warfare and other forms of terrorism. I think often of the angel's greeting, "Be not afraid." So when this line of the poem emerged, it took me by surprise. It was not an imperative or an admonition, but a promise. Whatever crossing you are facing, whatever barrier must be breached, you will be unafraid. When it is expressed this way, I begin to see that freedom from fear is not a state of mind to be mastered, but a gift of grace. I don't have to make myself unafraid. When the time comes, if I'm open to grace, even when it looks itself a little threatening, I will be unafraid. In light of that promise, I am able to imagine that whatever it is that enables ordinary people to drag children from under truck wheels or stand in front of an assault rifle to protect students or face down wildfires to rescue trapped animals might also enable me, when the time comes, to face whatever I'm called to face. It is an assurance. What you need is near and available. The great classic adventure stories I have loved reinforce this archetypal theme. The weak whose hearts are open and willing will be made strong. The humble will be exalted. Those who consent to the journey will learn by going where they have to go. My husband and I recently embarked once again on the Fellowship of the Ring with a grandson who hasn't yet made his way through that magnificent story. It's a tale that has richly reinforced and enhanced my awareness of how much happens by the awful grace of God and moves in mysterious ways. When Gandalf appears or Tom Bombadil to assist the hobbits in times of danger, I remember stories of angels and guides who stopped travelers on the road or in the night and showed them a way they had not planned to go or infused them with a courage they would never have suspected in themselves. Over every rushing stream, they seem to find a bridge. To me, all sacred stories seem to point to this, that light shines in all that is, that divine presence is omnipresent, that when we can see in every bush a burning bush, we will know what it is to pray without ceasing. And now we are going to sing together the final hymn called God of Creation. It is in the supplement.